You know, one undeniable fact is that we will all have our own moment of death. And Buddhist chaplain Stephen Spiro says we can choose to be more or less conscious in that moment. Spiro leads workshops on death, dying, and letting go, and he works as a counselor to the dying. Saranix wanted to know more about this thing called conscious dying.
My understanding is that sometimes when you're working with people, you encourage them or walk them through a kind of meditation on their own death.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain how that works?
Well, first, let me say that there are really stages of preparing for death, whether we have a terminal diagnosis or whether we're 21 years old. In my opinion, a lot of what the wisdom traditions have been teaching over the millennia are spiritual practices that allow us to let go. And so, in a way, spiritual practice is walking the path of dying.
I once had a yoga teacher who, in Shavasana, in the resting period at the end of the yoga class, offered a visualization to us that is pretty untraditional in the westernized yoga tradition, which is that after all the kind of relaxing the face, relaxing the feet, relaxing the hands, so on and so forth, he said, now imagine that you are 6 feet underground and the soil is pressing you into the soil underneath you and there is nothing to do. There is no action necessary. And for me, it was a beautiful moment of release of any intention or agency. And every so often, very rarely, I suffer from insomnia, and I remember that again. I do that again. I imagine being 6 feet under, being buried underground, and just being kind of contained. And it's fascinating to me because when I mention it to other people, generally, they find the notion appalling. I wonder what kind of responses you get when you ask people to confront the true notion of mortality, their mortality.
Let me tell you a story about this. So when I lived out in the country, I was a volunteer EMT. And one call we went to was for a gentleman in his late 80s who had suffered a heart attack. And by the time we got to the scene, it was in a house, he was lying on the floor and he was dead. There was just no question about it. There was no treatment, nothing we could do. So we called the coroner. And we waited, and this is in a very rural area, and it took a long time. And it was a sad scene. You know, a lot of the family was there. It was very sad. And so eventually they took the body away, and we dispersed, and I went home. And I always do a meditation after any kind of a call just to sort of release it. And I did that, and suddenly I had this unbelievable experience of incredible joy. And everything was luminous. You know, the chair, the light, you know, the dog, you know, my wife, everything was just luminous. And I said, what is going on here? And the answer came to me right away. I'm not dead. That man was dead. And I'm alive. And it brought this amazing immediacy and intensity to my experience, which is possible, you know, to bring in more and more and more and to really enliven, you know, our life. So that's a reason for these kind of practices. Life becomes sweeter.
It sounds like what you're saying is that being mindful of our mortality, essentially, creates the possibility for us to be more conscious in our living. And you're also a proponent of conscious dying. I wonder if you could explain just a bit what that is.
Well, you know there's the Woody Allen quote.
I don't know it.
I don't mind dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a lot of people agree with that. I think the conscious aspect can come in terms of planning. So we can plan at many different levels. You know, we can plan at practical levels, you know, writing wills and getting our affairs in order.
Advanced
and so
medical directives.
All of those things, very important. we can take a little step deeper and we can plan at a relational level. Who am I at odds with in my life? Who do I need to forgive? Who needs to forgive me? There's a lot of suffering when people don't do these things. So that's part of conscious dying.
You have this, you shared with me an advanced directive for conscious dying, which I filled out.
Good for you.
It was really interesting to do it. You know, you have questions here about who do you want to be with you most and who do you not want there? Some of those answers for me were really surprising. What are some of the responses that you get to this process of figuring out if we are given the luxury of time, how we would like to use those final weeks.
Yeah. And just the exercise of imagining a scenario where we are dying sets things up in stark contrast. So I really don't want that person there. I really want to see these people. I really want these, all of these kinds of issues that are brought up in the Advanced Directive for Conscious Dying suddenly become real. And so the exercise of filling these out and thinking about these things may be extremely useful for how you're going to live 5 minutes from now. Well, now maybe I will give that person a call. Or what about...
Maybe I will issue that apology. Maybe I will make sure they know I love them now.
Yeah, exactly.
Filling this out was really interesting for me, and thank you for sharing it. And one of the things that was most surprising to me and really made me pause is one question that you have, and it you ask, how strictly do you want your wishes to be adhered to by your loved ones? Do you want them to do exactly as you say, even if they may be uncomfortable? Do you want your loved ones to do what brings them the most peace? And I wondered how much about this conscious dying movement is about claiming ownership of our deaths in a way and or sharing it.
Yeah, and we don't want to encourage clinging to a certain scenario either. And that's why that question is in there. You know, here's how I see it all unfolding, and I'm ready to let go of it. There's a there was a woman who declared that she's a deep Buddhist practitioner and just made it very clear to everyone that she did not want any kind of drug. She didn't want morphine or anything like that. And it puts those around her into an ethical dilemma at a certain point.
Because she's visibly suffering.
Visibly suffering. And it reaches a point where someone has to say, we need to override this. And so giving permission for that as an example, I think is very important.
What have you seen in terms of the most common challenges that come up for people to die as peacefully as possible?
A lot of times we're afraid of leaving people who we don't know if they're going to be okay without us. You know, and so we talk about the five things that we want said at the end of life. First one's I love you. Second one is I forgive you. Third one is please forgive me. Fourth one is thank you. Thank you for your life. And the fifth one is it's okay. It's okay to die. I'll be okay if you die. They'll be okay if you die. You'll be okay if you die. All of those things. So the impediments can arise at any one of those levels.
So in this directive for conscious dying, one of the things that I kept wondering was, well, I felt a sense of ownership over my death that I had never felt before, my theoretical death. But then I started to wonder how much it is actually for other people, making space for other people to have their experience of my death as well.
It's so true. Humans have tried not to die alone, I think, for as long as we've been around. We've wanted this to be an event that's shared. And we can think about other people in our lives who've died my grandmother or my father or whoever it was, what impact that had on my life, and then turn it around and say, what impact will my death and how I die, what impact will that have on other people?
It's our final act in a way.
Indeed. And can be our final gift.
Sarah Nix talking with Stephen Spiro. He's a Buddhist chaplain from Madison, Wisconsin. And you can find a link on our website to some resources he's put together on preparing for the end of life, including that advanced directive on conscious dying. Click on resources at ttbook.org/death.